I'd like to introduce for our third speaker, César Guadalupe, who is, like me, a sociologist with degrees from the Catholic University of Peru and a PhD from the University of Sussex. Later, he became a lecturer in the same Catholic University of Peru and head of the Peruvian Research into Political Administration, head of the Analysis Unit at the Planning Division of the Peruvian Education Ministry as well. He became a consultant on education statistics at UNESCO, and particularly as a regional advisor. He has since become the senior program specialist at UNESCO since May 2007. His main concern, his major area of concern, is the linkage between social development, quality development, all areas which we've been touching on throughout today's conference. His specialist areas particularly are revolving around political sociology, political philosophy, social theory, and education. His publications have been particularly measuring universal primary school completion in Latin America, quality education for all, a human rights issue, again looking particularly at the regional educational project in Latin America, and assessing the goal of universal primary education. So he's particularly an authority on an area, Latin America, which I myself very much I'm keen to learn more about. It's particularly complex, obviously, because of very early colonization and the great threat this imposed to indigenous languages. The development of literacy skills occurs within the context of linguistic hegemony and, indeed, the resulting linguistic hybridity. So I'm very interested to hear what he will say about this and other subjects. Thank you.
Thank you so much for the introduction. I have to share the same feelings that the previous speaker said about getting more information than the thing we send. Okay, let me try, of course, before going straight to the presentation. Personal appreciation for having the opportunity to be first here in Scotland, and second with all of you here sharing some basic. Could I use the other one that you have? I mean, the opportunity to share with you some ideas of some of the things that we have learned over the past few years trying to measure literacy skills across different countries of the world. And also personally for having the opportunity to share this panel and this day with, I mean, these amazing colleagues here. It's an honor for me to be part of this today. Before I start with some, I need to say something else. I mean, I work for the Institute for Statistics, but the good thing is that you already know that I'm not a statistician. And I need to say that for one reason, because working on education, I'm used to see a sort of schizophrenic relationship with the statistics. On one side, we hate that thing. We usually take that thing at its face value. I mean, the numbers are there, and then there's some kind of mysterious thing. So if someone comes and say, X 0.5% of something happens, it should be X 0.5%. Nobody criticizes that. And we should. But the tricky thing is that in order to criticize the things, we have to understand it. And that's a tricky part of it. So let me start with something that we just released. I mean, we at the Institute for Statistics released last week. I mean, it's in relation to the literacy rates and the numbers that were mentioned in the morning. I mean, we talk about 796 million people being reporting not being able to read and write. And sometimes we find about 796 or 94 or 93. We don't know. Actually, that's not the real thing. So, but I'm going to do something that is not usual with this. These are the literacy rates we have today in the world. But I would like you to pay attention to something that we usually don't do, to pay attention not to the figures, but the parts of the world where we don't have figures, which are this. Usually it's the other way around, yeah? But not for literacy rates. Why not? Because these countries don't produce literacy rates. Because if you produce literacy rates that are, let's say, 97%, 98%, 99%, you don't get much information off of that. Adama said in the morning, if you go to a country like those in red there, meaning less than 50%, you already have something. Something that is actionable. Something that works. It's good enough to say, oh, we have an issue here. We have a real problem here. We might not know some other things about it, but at least we have a big alert. And that's good enough for policy, for at least to start doing something. In these other countries, I mean, there's a risk. There is no issue about literacy in this country. And that's the problem with the discourse about the eradication of illiteracy. Once we eradicate illiteracy, the literacy issue disappears. And that's a risk. That's a major risk. So the problem with this distribution of the data is that these countries discover that literacy is not about literates and illiterates, but it's about this continuum of skills and finding out how these skills are actually distributed in society and finding out that there are some groups of populations where literacy skills exist but might be weak and need to be improved, and actually need to be improved for everybody, because it's a matter of how these literacy skills link to this idea of lifelong learning. So the question is, if these countries, actually the U.S. started doing this in the early 80s, and then we have some international studies in the 90s, I mean, Ralph in the morning mentioned the International Adult Literacy Survey conducted between 93 and 98 in total, I mean, it was a long period. And another sequel of that study was the Adult Literacy and Life Skills Survey conducted between 2003 and 2005. Those were the most important international experiences. But we don't have a measure of skills in any other part of the world. So one of the things, and Adama mentioned that we started this program that I am responsible for in 2003, it was how can we measure literacy and numeracy skills around the world in those places where they don't have these measures. Why this is important? Because something that I think was embedded in your observation in the morning, Kathy, because is we need to know, I mean, you are all educators probably here, and you know that one of the risks is that if I put a label, illiterate, that is equal for everybody, I mean, my educational program might not work, because one size-fits-all kind of solution might not be the good solution. That is embedded in this discussion about the war of the methods that Adama mentioned in the morning. This method is better, this method is better, this method is better than the others. The problem is the context. The problem is the populations are different. Those that are labeled as illiterates are not equal, are not homogeneous. So we need to get something about what they are able to do today. Actually, they can do some for staff. They might not be able to do some other things. But that's a good point, to start with an educational experience. If we know the previous knowledge of the learner, we have a basic element to design a learning experience. So that's the reason why that's one of the good reasons why measuring skills is important, and we need to think, as UNESCO, we need to think about that, and we need to find ways to do this across the world. So actually what we decided in 2003 was to start by learning from the OECD experience, which are these two studies that were conducted. Some of our colleagues, in a very naive way, basically thought about replicating the thing. I mean, you mentioned someone earlier that I'm not going to quote because this is going to be recorded, but you mentioned someone who said, okay, we already have the methods, let's apply this everywhere. It's going to work. It didn't. It couldn't. There's no way these things can work everywhere, and I'm going to explain. I mean, most of the reflections that I'm going to share with you are exactly related to that. The good thing about that is that when we tried that and that thing didn't work, that created a huge mess. And I've been responsible for cleaning up the mess, meaning that I have learned a lot. That's a good thing about that story. In any case, replicating or not replicating whatever was done in the OECD countries require validating the approach, validating the tools before launching a program on a more global scale. I mean, that's a basic thing you have to do in research. You have to validate what you have. So we have been working with some countries, and so far, I mean, Ralph's presentation from the morning saved me from explaining what we have done because it's quite similar. This idea of measuring basically reading skills in prose and document, in these two scales, prose and document, which is continuous and non-continuous text. And in addition to that, measuring some quantitative or numeracy skills, basically numeracy skills as mediated by written materials is what we are doing. In addition to that, the main difference between what we have been doing and what the survey that you conducted here in Scotland last year is that we added something else to that approach. We added a specific module, what is called reading components, which are the very, very basic skills or competencies that you have to have in order to be able to read. Being able to recognize letters, numbers, being able to decode words, being able to read fluently a passage and a paragraph. Those things become automatic processes in competent readers. But that's what you need to master first in order to, let's say, complete the process of learning to read and being able to read for another purpose. So we added a module on that actually because we want to look at the lower end of the distribution because we're expecting that the lower end of the distribution in many countries of the world will not be 1 in 28 people. Will be something different from that. And we need more detailed information in that lower end to have a body of evidence that is enough for policy, for designing policy and program interventions. So that's the major difference, but the rest is basically the same thing. We have worked with these countries so far, which are 8 countries in different parts of the world, Salvador, Jordan, Mongolia, Morocco, Niger, the occupied Palestinian territories, Paraguay, and Vietnam. Quite a diverse world. Let me compare that thing with the OECD experience just for a second to illustrate one of the key issues here. We have only 8 countries. They did this in 22. They work in 15 languages. We work in 10 languages, a little bit. But the main difference is this: is that these 15 languages are all European languages. And we have worked with languages belonging to 6 different linguistic families that are completely different. I mean, it's not the same to learn to read in a language like Vietnamese, which is basically syllabic, than doing this in a European language. And even for European languages, learning to read in English is not the same as learning to read in Spanish. I mean, there is something that is called orthographic transparency. Transparency or orthographic depth is different in these languages. If you know the basic rules of decoding in Spanish, actually you can read this text that is in Spanish here. You might not be able to understand it, but you might be able to decode it properly. You cannot do that in English, and that's the reason why you have in the schools a lot of things about the spelling. Because double O doesn't sound the same way all the time. Flot is not the same as loo. I mean, and you know that. I mean, that's related to orthographic transparency, and you need to learn these things in a different way. And I'm just talking about alphabetic languages. I'm not talking about logographic languages, which is a completely different thing. I mean, ask a Chinese about the importance of the number of strokes when they write, or ask a Japanese about the 3 scripts that they use, actually 4 when they romanize their own language. Okay, so that created some problems for us, especially if we also relate the fact that it's not about the number of languages and the number of families, it's also the number of scripts and the number of numeral systems. So we have been working with this diversity. That is not all the diversity that there is in the world, but it's good enough as a starting point. And we have learned a few things, and that's what we want to say. One of the things that we have in our current definitions of literacy, whatever the definitions are, might be different, is that they talk about reading, writing, using numbers in real life, basically. What is a real life situation when you try to develop a test? In a test, what is real life? Who's real life to begin with? One thing is the real life of those who develop a test in a hypothetical listener is setting like Princeton, or, I mean, just to mention an hypothetical scenario, than preparing item tests in a different context. I don't know why you're laughing. Is it possible to develop and use cognitive items that are universally valid? Is it possible to find that kind of stuff? Because we want to have comparable information. Literacy is a human concern, a universal concern. We want to have them. Of course, do they exist? Some people say yes. And when they say yes, basically what they are revealing is an amazing degree of ethnocentrism. Whatever we do here, not Princeton today, Ottawa, just to say another place, casual place, works everywhere in the world because the whole world is the same, and if it's not the same, should be the same. They might not have a shopping mall in Niamey, but just a matter of time. So one of the tricky things is that we should have proper translation adaptation and in some case developmental guidelines, because there are things that have to be created out of scratch, from the scratch, because they don't work exactly the same way. There are things that are language specific or script specific that have to be developed. And that's true. Second thing, paper and pencil tests. It's the way we test things in school. In education, yes. What about population with no schooling? That are not used to test to begin with, or where differences between reading and writing might be huge. We all learn to read and write together at the same time, basically. What about those who never went to school and learned to read in a one way and probably never learned to write? If you're going to test, as you did here in your test, and we do at the same time, we test reading skills using paper and pencil tests, you're asking people to write in order to measure reading. Is that immaterial to the results? Sometimes it's not, and that's something that we need to check. What about official, non-official, oral languages? What are we going to do with this? And those things are not innocent things, are related to power structures, are related to distribution of opportunities and fundamental rights. And it's not easy. These issues are not easy to sort out. I come from a country where we have something like 62 languages. But if you don't learn Spanish, you're dead. So it's not the same. And of course, people is entitled to learn and study, et cetera, et cetera, in their own language. Great. But your window of opportunities will be completely different because of the way languages and power are intertwined. I'm speaking here in English. Sorry, there is a reason for that. And actually, you are speaking in English. And there is a reason for that. Same. Globalization is a real process. Yes, globalization is a real process, but it's different from a globalization agenda, is what I said about the shopping mall in the MA. So it's about quantitative items or numeracy items being basically equivalent to market-related items. There are different things to measure in this. Shouldn't be done. Okay. And of course, there are problems that are related to what we do. We are not a testing company running a study just because we want to have the data. We have to provide a service over member states. So there are issues about ownership here. If we have a contractor doing the whole staff, who's going to be able to replicate that if the contractor has everything here? You will never know how plausible values are computed. not even know why plausible values are computed or what the hell plausible values are. I mean, those things are part of this tricky thing because actually testing is a business and we shouldn't be naive about that. And the other thing is, why do we care about literacy skills? And there are different views about this and different views that are behind the decisions that we made in our study design. Is a fundamental human right or is something that has an instrumental or utilitarian value? The answer to that leads, for instance, to what's the target population for my study. Those who are 66 and over, I don't care about them. They are not part of the active population. And actually, education is about rates of return. It's not about fundamental human rights. That's a discussion I have with my wife. Why do you pay several years of overseas student tuition fees in a UK university to get a doctoral degree and your salary hasn't changed at all? Okay, I mean, it's because I believe in this thing about lifelong learning, etc. It's not an investment, it's an expenditure. Right? I mean, everything has to be paid. There is no free lunch. Nobody asks what is the rate of return of having elections. We pay for that thing at the same time. If this were a real right, nobody would be asking about it. I mean, it's important to have to say that there are connections with economic growth and other things. I'm not denying that thing. But the bottom line is, if it's a right, we have to pay for it. That's it. End of the story. Yep. So let me say just two things to complete the thing. First, I mean, I already say that we have these things about, I mean, what literacy includes these areas of reading, writing, and text-mediated numeracy, not all numeracy skills. I mean, you can be very competent performing some skills like, for instance, sorry, I think I skipped something that I wanted to say. No. I mean, what's the impact of playing darts in a pub on your numeracy skills? And probably you do that orally, and someone else takes the scores in the board. You can do that. That's part of life. But that's not necessarily something written. I mean, we compute things, and I mean, for literacy, we usually include that thing. In our tests, in the tests that you run here, in the tests that we're running, we're not including writing because it's too complex in terms of administering a scoring. And I mean, if I do a test and I have to write something, I don't know how someone is going to score that thing because myself, I cannot read what I write after 2 hours. Okay? And of course, there is a discussion about these other literacies, health literacy, computer literacy, information literacy, whatever literacy you want. And there is a connection between these two things. But what I would like to say is that you have to be very clear in terms of what do we mean by literate in this context, or what by literacy in this context. We usually mean to be able to cope competently with situations that are related to X. And that is not necessarily text-mediated. Mediated by written materials. And we have to be very careful about that. Yeah? Not always requires literacy in the sense of dealing with written materials. You can manage information broadcasted by a radio station without reading and writing. I mean, are oral cultures condemned to be considered competent because of this? Or not. I mean, there are many things that you can do. I mean, the word doesn't end in the written part of it. The written part of it is very important in terms of all the things that enable us to do, but it's not the end of the word. And finally, there is an interaction, and that interaction is related to what is called the literate environment, how we live and what our everyday lives are. And that's also that is related to the way we measure these things. We usually measure the literate environment in relation to home, how many books, how many hours, how many things you do at home or at work. But what we usually overlook is the local community activity. I mean, and that's not accidental. I mean, usually if we have an individualistic approach to this, we overlook that part. And those are decisions that we are embedded in the designs of our studies for different reasons. Okay. So, just to wrap up in 15 seconds. This is difficult, and it's difficult because it combines three different things. Household survey techniques, you have to test people in their houses, and that has a problem. Educational testing techniques, and that has its own word of complexity, but also because of these other things that are behind the design that impact what we're measuring. The kind of political discourses and political interests that are behind this. We need to foster the public interest, and that's the reason why what we're doing is not a study. We're running a study. It's basically an effort to develop a methodology that is going to be available for countries to promote the development of capacity so that the countries can do this by themselves. And therefore, the combination of these two things should lead to a sustainable production of data. Okay. In any case, if you want to read more about this, there's a publication called The Next Generation of Literacy Statistics that is available on our website. If you go to our website, please don't visit the part of this project because it hasn't been updated for quite a long time. We've been very busy with all these problems, so we haven't paid much attention to the website. But it's going to be updated in about 2 months. But you can download those documents, which is a description of this. And thank you so much for your attention. Thank you. Bye-bye.